Hello and welcome to Seafar Sounding. I'm your host, Simba Wiltz.
And I'm Asla Gonser.
Seafar Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of the big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At Seafar, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
You can find out more about us on our website at cflar.org.
We're also on social media. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cflar and on Twitter at cflarbigcats.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/CFL Animal Reserve. This week, we're going to discuss new technologies that are now available for conservationists to help protect the environment and the animals in it. So recently, I've been doing some research on the web and also heard some interesting interviews with some professionals in this field. And obviously, one of the big things we've seen, you know, social media has affected our lives greatly. And we all can attest to that in our daily lives, how much information we now have on the web available to everybody, for everyone to see. And we're all putting it up there. Well, this kind of availability of information is also helping the conservationists with their efforts to conserve lands, forests, and animals.
What kind of technologies did you find out about?
Well, one of the things that's interesting is one of the things we often all use is Google Maps. Well, there's another thing called Google Earth that is actually getting lots of data from not only people on ground doing pictures and stuff like that, but they also get their data from satellite imagery from NASA. And there's lots of different satellites that are being launched to create sort of a living picture of the Earth. So even as time goes on, this living picture is being updated in a very almost real-time basis to keep track of what's happening on the Earth.
I remember going to Google Earth just recently and seeing they had that new time-lapse thing where you can see what a site looked like a year ago, 2 years ago. Could be very interesting over time.
Yeah, well, Google Earth has been around since I think around 2005 or 6 or something like that. So you have a amount of data now that has been constructed that you can do some time-lapse information to see, for example, what your city looked like years ago and how it's changed over the course of time.
So how is this affecting the conservation community?
It's allowing conservationists to do things like track areas of forestation and areas that are designated for logging, areas that are national parks, and see the different effects and changes over the landscape of those different areas.
So kind of like having the old city maps, how you used to have to go down to town hall and get out the old maps to see what the topography would be. Now, instead, with the magic of modern technology, we're able to do that almost in real time with actual pictures.
Yeah, and there's actually some interesting benefits that have come from it, not just the conservation aspect, but biologists have been looking at this kind of data, and they've actually discovered things that we didn't know existed. For example, there was a reef that was discovered off the coast of Australia that was not known about. There was also a rainforest discovered in a mountaintop that was not known about. And that later led to an expedition to that rainforest that led to the discovery of some new species.
Well, we certainly recognize the power of Google Earth in that.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to actually see that the fact that this Google Earth thing is giving us the ability to see our entire planet in a different way than we've been able to tangibly see. But in the areas of conservation and protection, they're also using it to see, for example, if you can overlay maps with it that are designated national parks, designated logging areas, designated forests, and designated farmlands and cities and such like that, you can keep track of what's happening in areas that are what would be considered vital for the survival of certain animal species. So, for example, if there's a logging going on in an area and you see the deforestation on Google Earth, if it's in an area that it's not supposed to be happening, you have actual pure evidence in your hands to show, look, this is happening, and be able to go to law enforcement and say, there's a problem here, there's illegal logging happening. Google Earth actually has an outreach program that they're already working with law enforcement and media to bring these kind of things to people's attention with the conservationists, they're working with businesses in these areas and basically keeping the businesses from doing illegal logging and such. There was a case that was recently talked about on the island of Sumatra that there's this Google Earth thing is being used to check on the, like I said, the natural lands and making sure that deforestation is not happening where it shouldn't be. And they're working with the local governments as well as with the local businesses to keep illegal logging from happening and illegal deforestation from happening. It's forcing the businesses to actually remove deforestation or illegal logging from their market chains or their the chain of their goods.
It's interesting because in the course of business, the people who are the business heads oftentimes aren't the ones on the ground actually doing the work. They may be sitting in an office somewhere many, many miles away just looking for the outcomes. But by being able to actually bring this data to them, it produces an interesting sort of world citizenship whereby they really can't deny the impact that their business may be having, but are also put in the somewhat desirable position of actually being able to have the greatest impact to stop it.
What that allows is as they remove those illegal practices from their markets and from their actual chain of a business, when businesses are able to remove this illegal obtaining of resources out of their chains, then that cuts off the people that are doing that kind of thing, that are actually going out and doing the illegal logging and such, because now they don't have anyone to sell those illegal logs to. So it actually, from a real sense, makes it a monetary problem, which we've talked about in the past, that if you change it to a monetary thing, conservation is easier to deal with.
And it does also create an isolating effect, which can be very useful for law enforcement and otherwise, noting that legitimate businesses are going to do everything they can to stay within the letter of the law. However, we know that the illegal taking of animals and other commonplace syndicates of crime, they basically are using these to fund illegal activities, and so they have no reason to stop this. It just means that there is a tighter link between when they find somebody doing illegal logging, they can trace it back to illegal businesses a little bit easier.
It also shows the evidence of that illegal business right to the business owner.
If the business owner is known. Again, the syndicates that are doing this, the ones that are funding terrorism, the ones that are difficult to put a hand on, are going to continue doing what they're doing, and this technology will hopefully enable us to better secure those areas and use that as a better means of getting to those people, because the criminals really don't have a care for nature. They really just have a care for their own enterprise. And getting the legitimate businesses to move away from it, find other ways, will force them to either find new havens or force them into the light as they become the last ones standing.
So another type of technology that's being used, and in conjunction with Google Earth in some cases, is GPS tracking devices. There are different initiatives going on now with the World Wildlife Fund and some other organizations in Kenya. Some Kenyan conservation organizations are actually putting GPS tracking devices on animals themselves, putting them on elephants, for example. And then they can track where the elephants are, and with along with Google Earth's technology, be able to superimpose that and know where they are, migrating to where they are in the landscape. This leads to many different things you can do with that, including behavioral studies to know where the migration patterns are, where the corridors need to be so that these animals can get to where they need to go. And also, you can see when they're getting too close to villages and to areas where they don't need to be, and perhaps even stop them from going into those villages so that you're reducing that connection to the animals interacting with the humans.
Do you think that they went to the process of getting consent for the elephants to use their private data?
I don't think so. Actually, it's interesting you mention it that way, but privacy is an interesting question at this point. I don't think that the elephants had to hit okay, I agree, to be tracked, but it is hopefully in their own safety. It's interesting because they also seem to have kind of a method where they can actually have the elephant sort of kind of send a text to say, I'm getting close to your village, because people are tracking it, and then they know that these elephants are coming close, and they can do something to either send out rangers or people to perhaps encourage them to go a different route, so that there isn't that interaction with the elephants and the people. And this isn't just elephants, it's other animals as well. They're tracking many different animals. But the ability is there to kind of keep track of where the animals are, where they're migrating, and of course it helps with knowing their numbers.
With any technology, there's also the great chance that it could be misused, and the biggest concern there would be that if it's publicly available, that not only would the people know about it, but the criminals would know about it as well.
Well, that's an interesting perspective that needs to be discussed as well, because if that data is available and poachers get a hold of it, obviously it can be misused to totally the opposite effect. I know that the people that are working on these GPS tracking devices, they're also working on making them less expensive, but one of the other things they're working on is working with data security folks to try to make that more secure so that only the people that are intended to get that data get that data. And it would be sort of akin to what we do with websites for banking, you know, that you can only get to your accounts and your data. But obviously, we all know that where there's a will, there's a way, and where there's computer systems, there's always a hacker. So there is a risk of that kind of thing happening.
Right. And at the base of that, we've still got the war of the money and the power that these criminal syndicates do have to go in and make an impact to the detriment of the natural world is something that should not be underestimated, certainly. And even with all of this great technology that we can invest to learn various things, that does come with a responsibility that not everyone is going to undertake.
And it's unfortunate in the sense that when you do have good technology like this, yes, it can be used for good, but it alternatively can also be used for bad purposes as well. The point would be to try to break that need for them to do the illegal activity in the first place, meaning that you break the money chain where it isn't profitable for them to be killing the animals. That's kind of the hard part. For example, we know that the ivory trade is illegal in many countries. In Africa, certainly, it's illegal. And the numbers of elephants have decreased greatly. I was recently looking at some information stating that we only have about 300,000 or 400,000 elephants left in the African areas now. And used to be in the early 20th century, we had 5 million elephants. In the early 19th century, we had like 27 million elephants. The ivory trade has a lot to do with it, too, because ivory is such a big commodity, big high-price commodity on top of it. Well, part of that problem is that although ivory trade is illegal in Africa, it's still legal in China. So when you have that legal market available, it's going to lead to people wanting to kill the elephants, take the ivory, and get it to China and make money off of it.
The challenge of the legal market is one that has been in the news for quite some time. China recently discussed the possibility of farming a number of creatures that they have an affinity for, with the concept of creating a pool of creatures that they could use for their marketing needs without necessarily impacting the wild. And this was very quickly shot down by a number of conservationists and shouted down from a number of different people, because that created a market that was not going to spare the wild. For example, in 2006, it was discovered that there were roughly 4,000 what they called farmed tigers in China. And these tiger farms, which were entirely intended for the production of parts to be moved into the animal trade, caused a huge stir, as well as caused a huge problem, because the parts of a wild tiger look exactly the same as the parts from a farmed tiger. And while we've been saying this for years, it's not something that has gone away, and we don't really know the full extent of how much this is done. We just know that as long as there is a legal avenue for something, then there is going to be an illegal avenue for something.
It seems like logically it would make sense to do what you're saying, to have farms for what they're doing to help reduce the impact on the wild. But you're saying that actually hasn't reduced the impact on the wild.
It's the exact opposite. It's the same reason why we have knockoffs. It's the same reason why when a brand product is produced that's very successful, you'll see 5 and 6 other Me Too products. It's trying to take the success off of the normal channel and use that success to generate revenue. It's a very common business strategy. It's part of business 101 that success breeds success, and any entrepreneur would want to go right up next to something that already works because it's easy money.
Yeah, well, you wonder. Easy money is kind of a sad way to look at it, but in this case, that easy money is being paved by the death of these animals. So another technology that's being used is drone technology. There's been a lot of controversy about drones being used for many different kinds of things, but in this case, they're talking about using drones to actually survey different areas of land and being able to track animals' migration that way as well, and also see if there are people in the area that shouldn't be there. In the government of Nepal, they're using this kind of technology right now. And some of the drones are fitted with like night vision technology, so they can actually do surveys at night as well. And this way, they're actually flying over their country and seeing in the areas of national parks and forests and areas where people are not supposed to be, making sure that there aren't people out there doing things they shouldn't be. If there's a campfire going at night in an area where there shouldn't be people, now you have a way to locate them and maybe send rangers out to confront them. So it's actually been helping in the government there. The government's very supportive of this whole technology and has been backing it with their security efforts, which of course is the key. If you're going to do enforcement, you've got to have the security backup to make it work. And it has been working in Nepal. They actually have had, according to some figures, 2 years with no poaching of elephants, tigers, or rhinos in the country of Nepal.
Which is an extraordinary accomplishment, if true.
Yes, definitely an extraordinary thing. So you've got this kind of capability to use these drones and GPS technology and Google Earth to track all these things all at once and give you information that you wouldn't have had before in order to know where to send security, where to send rangers to either change the path where elephants are moving or tigers are moving to keep them away from people, and even where to send rangers to arrest people that are doing illegal activities.
Yeah, it's a sad economic reality that a lot of these countries can't provide running water and toilets for their people. So the actual expense of sending rangers out into the various forests and whatnot has actually kept a lot of them from manning those parks year-round. There were stories out of India in the mid-2000s that talked about how they were only able to staff the park for 9 months out of the year, which basically created a 3-month hunting season. But with this drone technology, if they invest it properly and go through the proper training, there's the possibility that these areas can be watched in a manner that heretofore was impossible to do and far less expensive than having flyovers from helicopters and other heavy equipment.
And of course, that brings up a whole other issue, too, is the having the manpower to watch all of this technology. Actually, if you're going to have drones out there, you have to have somebody running it, somebody watching it. And of course, a lot of these kinds of things are in remote areas. But obviously, as technology gets better and better, those drones are allowing them to go and watch remote areas, even from a populated area, from a city, for example. So it's, I guess, a matter of getting the people to man those kind of things, get enough people on the ground that are actually running those devices so that you can keep a good track of the entire area where the forests are and where the logging is and where the national parks are and, you know, get a better idea of what's going on in your country real time. So it is a good thing to see that at least in the government of Nepal, this kind of thing has been working. So we're hoping that this can be expanded to other governments and other areas But of course, it does matter that the people in those communities, that the governments accept this and are willing to work with it to change the behaviors in their countries.
Trying to get down to that cultural change, that's really the real challenge, since we over here in the United States and many other countries around the world that don't have these creatures in their native habitats, it's very easy for us to say, well, you guys need to do X, Y, and Z. It's just very difficult to beat the lifestyle when you've got people who are scraping by a living and they've got very rich middlemen who are feeding their families at the expense of these animals.
So it does come down to the economics. You've got to break those chain that allows this to be an economical thing to do. And of course, that's a very difficult thing. But at least this kind of technology is giving them the evidence to know what's happening illegally. The other part of that has got to be the governmental changes and society changes so that it's not profitable for those animals to be dead, that they're more profitable alive than dead. And some of that can come from tourism and different kinds of safaris that go out and take pictures of animals. So making it so that it's more profitable to keep the animals alive is the hard part. And that's the part that really needs some work as far as the change for the society as well as for the government. And some of those kinds of things are, for example, those safaris that go out and take pictures of animals and tourism and those kind of things help make it possible for the environment to be profitable as an intact environment, as opposed to the environment being profitable for killing the animals.
Now, you also found something else that was really interesting with regards to how others can have an impact on what people are seeing in the conservation field.
Yeah, and again, this is going back to our whole world of social media changing the world. Many of us have heard of this website called WikiLeaks that was used to leak many different types of information regarding different governments to the world. Well, there's a new site called WildLeaks that uses the similar kind of technology in that you can use a Tor technology that allows you to be anonymous when putting your data up there. In fact, the Tor browser can be used to browse the web without anyone knowing where you're going. So it's a completely anonymous type thing. And on the other side of that, the people that are running WildLeaks also don't know who you are. So it's anonymous on both sides. You're giving the data, WildLeaks is receiving it. They don't know who it's coming from. And there's no way in your computer to track that you sent that data to WildLeaks. Well, the idea of this is that people on the ground can actually give data, including pictures and information, directly to WildLeaks so that they can catch things that are happening on the ground. And that's kind of going more towards our change in the social as well. We talked about how you may have to change society for any of this to work. Well, this is kind of going to that. It's using the society, the culture, the people themselves to actually give us the leaks, to give us the information that leads to changing this behavior of illegal activity.
Well, with a name like WildLeaks, I was half expecting them to go out with a pheromone sensor and read the pea mail on the various trees.
That would be an interesting technique, actually. Read the pea mail on the trees. Another way to track elephants, I suppose, or tigers or anything. Follow the smell of buttered popcorn.
Something along those lines.
But WildLeaks does allow people to put in this information. In fact, one of the organizations with WildLeaks is working with tribes and communities, for example, in the Amazon, to give them cell phones to go take pictures of people that are logging on their lands, because those communities don't want their lands to go away. They want their trees to be there. So it's in their interest to bring this to light. And when WildLeaks gets the information, it's of course incumbent upon them to do the investigation to see that the data is true and then to do something about it. They have to investigate it, determine that it's true, determine that something is happening illegally, and then either bring it to the attention of security forces or police forces or whatever enforcement is available in that country. If that doesn't work, maybe even bring it to the attention of media so that the community knows what's going on, so that it brings it up to the community.
it's a great tool for being able to make sure that we try and hold everyone accountable. I would worry about whether or not they'll end up in administrative burnout, which would be something that would be a really bad thing if there's discovered to be so much out there that the regulatory agencies can't keep up with it. Then the enforcement becomes lax because they can't keep going.
So you're just saying that there's so much illegal activity that the enforcement can't possibly keep up investigating all of it or enforcing all of it?
Possibly both. It's sort of like when a new treatment comes out for a disease. Suddenly the screening community gets a little wild and they start finding the disease all over the place. And so suddenly the system becomes overwhelmed with the treatment of one particular condition to the detriment of others. In the case of Wild Leaks, the Google Earth, all of these pieces, for the first time, there's not going to be an ability for law enforcement to ignore the fact that this is happening. They are actually going to have to react and do something. And all of this reacting and doing something eventually can lead to an administrative burnout where they end up not being as effective at doing it, if not simply because they are overwhelmed with the number of requests.
Well, I wonder if you could draw some conclusions to that with how we deal with drug wars, for example. That probably falls into the category you're talking about in many countries where there is somewhat of an administrative burnout because there's just so much illegal activity in the drug trade that it's impossible to get all of it.
Or the government just gets involved itself.
And makes money off of it, right?
Exactly. If you make it legal, then you can tax it.
So, yeah, that's true. But at least Wild Leaks gives that evidence that we're talking about that allows it to not be swept under the rug as, oh, well, that's not really happening. Well, you can see that it actually is.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than calling the police out to some place and saying, no, officer, really, it was there. I imagine they would get tired of that pretty quickly.
Right. But it's an interesting technology in and of itself is the fact that it's feeding off this whole concept of social media to help with this conservation of trees and conservation of animals and all that kind of stuff. So all these technologies put together do definitely give information to the enforcement agencies that certainly wasn't there before and gives them the power to be able to hopefully use that to good. But of course, as we pointed out, that isn't always the case.
Well, knowledge is power, right?
Well, we hope that's true. That's right. CFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
Send us your thoughts. You can get us on email via contact@cflar.org.
Tune in again next week for more discussion. My name is Asla Gonser.
And I'm Simba Wilkes. Thanks for listening to CFAR Sounding.